Well, a very good evening to you out there, and thanks for taking time to tune in to us here on Radio Kerry's Terrace Talk on a Monday evening, coming to you live here in the studio in Tralee. I'm Donal Barry, of course, and I'll be with you until 8 o'clock this evening, and we look back at some of the action, I suppose, from the weekend's games of our county hurlers, and indeed we'll catch up with the victorious members of Mercy Mount Hawk, who have arrived in massive good quality time. I was letting them in the door already. How are you, lads? Good stuff. Obviously, and in the second hour, of course, we are going to look a bit at rallying, and of course we will talk about Kerry FC and their new season ahead, and of course it'll be in the second half of the show. Now it's going to be an action-packed show, so plenty of chatting. If you want to get involved, you can give us a call on 066 712 3666, or you can text us on 083 300 3300 as well for a chat on WhatsApp. Ivan is on and Keane's on the desk, and cameras and everything been set up here this evening, which is absolutely fantastic. Now, it was never going to be easy, I suppose, for Stephen Malumpy's Kerry senior hurling side as they travelled to Down at the weekend. I suppose over the years McKenna Park has been proved, it's been proved a downfall, I suppose, of many good Kerry side, and thus it proved once again on Saturday when the home side secured 2 points with an impressive I suppose wind assisted second half, to be fair, I suppose. Now watching that game for us, of course, was James McCarthy and Rich Dard for Ron. James McCarthy, you did say last week Down was the sort of place that even experienced Kerry sides would struggle, and unfortunately we struggled there again.
We dug a big hole for us, I'm not going to say the truth. It was, you know, started great, like, but I suppose the wind was a huge factor, like, you have to say that, but you wouldn't have thought there would have been that much of a drop off. Like, Kerry were still playing so well, they had a lot of shots on goal, and a good score racked up, but in fairness, against the Breeze, too, Down did their bit as well. I know Kerry was it 115 at half time, was it one? I'm not sure what their score was at half time, a big score anyway. Yeah, so it was like you kind of wonder, could we keep it going the second half? Like, but Jesus, Down came at us really strong, and like, as you saw, the strength of the wind, and just we're getting back into it. We had an unfortunate penalty saved, as such, that might have given us another breath of life. Like, but it seems to be, you know, we're just a little bit off. I don't know how have Down come so much ahead of us. Look, we might have Kildare and Meath to come. They might be the easier, looks like the easier games in the group so far, but nothing's easy at the minute for Kerry. They're just struggling a bit, and they need a win to really turn it around, and hopefully we'll get that in our next game now. But tough defeat against Saturday.
Yeah, Richard, I suppose that's pretty fair. I mean, nothing is coming easy for this Kerry side at the moment. I mean, it's a transitional side, it's a young side. I suppose, you know, it has spots of inexperience all the way through it as well, and maybe it was that inexperience that kind of maybe caught Kerry coming down the back straight in the second half.
Absolutely. I think it was an excellent first half, as James said there, and I suppose we should have been up by about 10 points at halftime, you know. But the third quarter, that's when the damage was done, when they scored 2-8, because, you know, there was a 14-point turnaround, and that 2-8 was the difference. You know, that was, we were up by 7 at halftime, and we were beaten by 7, so that was the difference. But I think, too, I think Down are better than what people give them credit for. I was very impressed with their performance against Leash the previous week, so it showed like that they are a decent side this year. But again, I said it last week, I think that the loss of our big players, I mean Mikey and Podge and Jason and Shane, Colin, Jordan, Daniel, Owen, 8 massive players missing, you know, and 16 new players. I think that if, as I said last week, if Jack O'Connor had 16 new players and had to plan without, let's say, Jason Foley, Gavin White, and the two Cliffords and Tom Sullivan and so on and so forth, I think he'd be scratching his head as well, I think. So I think we have to be realistic. When you have 16 new players and you have 8, I suppose, established players who are not available this year, and of course the extra blow of Shane Conway and Luke Crowley not being available this year, I think we have to be realistic. It's a team in transition, and we can't walk miracles overnight. You know, we don't have a production line, and it's going to be tough, and it was tough in McKenna Park. So hopefully Sunday week against Meath, Malumpian will be able to put that right.
Of course, Richard, talk about everything. I mean, you put the perfect plan that you have, you go out, and then Brendan Barrett gets injured after 4 minutes. I mean, he would have been absolutely crucial to the Kerry attack.
Absolutely, sure, Brandon. He's an outstanding player, you know, and for the hamstring to go again, I mean, he has had trouble with the hamstring and since they've gone again, you know. Now, when he has come in, he did well, but I think the problem was that we were flying in the first half. We had the Breeze behind us. We were putting good ball down to the boys. What happened then at the start of the second half, seemingly, was that, you know, we were against the Breeze and we were trying to work the ball out. And I think our inexperience told, and to put it bluntly, down, shut us down. Mm-hmm. They stopped us from coming out, working out, and getting the ball down to the boys, and that was our downfall. We conceded 2-8. The last quarter thing was even, but the 2-8 was the damage. So they shut us down. Our inexperience probably showed, but look at, you know, as I said, we have to be realistic. When you have 16 new players, you're missing 8 established players, it ain't going to be easy.
Mm-hmm. James, the first half, we'll go back to that, because I mean, that was hugely positive. I mean, Kerry started very lively, started 6 different scores fairly quickly, plenty good shooting. Obviously, they had the win with them, and I mean, you know, they weren't afraid to shoot from distance. Down, obviously, hitting, I suppose, on the counter, getting a few scores here and there. But the Kerry work rate was very good. It was kind of very important, I suppose, early doors. I mean, Morris O'Connor turning balls over, McAsey was reading the play. I mean, really backing himself and direct running and strong, I suppose, to be fair to him. Dan Goggin, you know, instrumental in so much. I mean, he almost had a goal chance as well in 25 minutes, that shot straight past the post, I suppose. And Michael Lean, I mean, he worked hugely hard. So, I mean, to go in at half-time up, knowing so well that you had done so well, but the wind was a huge factor, but you'd still be disappointed the fact that you didn't kind of put up a better gallop, maybe in the second half.
And that's exactly that. You have kind of summed up totally there, Dolan, to tell truly. It's and those players you talked about, they are now the leaders. They're kind of Fanon and Mike Lean and Dan Goggin and Massey Conn and these fellas. They're now the leaders, and they seem Brandon Pugier, he went off the crater, but these are the fellas you want. And like, when you lose any one or two, and like we lost, like even Richard said, we've lost real strong forces of inertia. You could say 9, 10 years, like Daniel Podge, Mikey, they're the guys you could probably rely on when you are trying to hold the lead, that they'll be cute enough just to maybe go down, pull a free out of it, kill the game a little, because it seems to me if they don't get 2-8 without reply, there's something wrong there. Momentum was never stopped in that 10-15 minute spell, like down get 2-8 without any reply. Like that's a big problem. That, and like, more experienced guys would see that coming, they wouldn't let it happen. Like, but do you know, we've been beating them down before. This is not a new thing to us. Like down, as we start, like down are improving every year. Mm-hmm. They're doing really,
and,
really well.
And to be fair, I mean, like, even with all those established players that we had down the lines, I mean, going to down was never an easy trip, even with those on board as well. And we have taken a couple of beatings up there in McKenna Park as well. And I suppose really down are kind of a bogey team as well. I mean, you know, I mean, obviously, I suppose, it's the perception that they're getting better, but going back to the Laois game, they certainly weren't that for long enough as well, so that probably would have entertained the idea that they were going to be a tougher ask. Richard, from here on in, Carlo and Down out of the way, looking at on paper, you would imagine that what's coming down the track is probably closer to where we are at the minute. But now, all of a sudden, is there going to be big pressure on Kerry to get that win? Because, I mean, obviously, if you don't get a win the next day, that's 3 defeats maybe. You might get a draw out of it, whatever. But the pressure is on. And then all of a sudden, rather than looking up, trying to get into a semi-final, you're probably looking at trying to stay up maybe.
Yeah, and as James said last week, with regard to the rejigging of the divisions, you know, you would hope to be in the new division too. That said, I think that, well, the first thing I would ask is people to come out Sunday weekend to support the Hurlers. I mean, obviously the heads are down at the moment. It was a tough journey home. You know, they've worked extremely hard. There is no issue, I think, with the amount of work they've put in, but they are inexperienced, and that showed in that third quarter last day. So if people could come out Sunday week and support them against Meath, I think, you know, hopefully we can get Shane back, you know, and he would be a massive addition to the team. But hopefully, with home advantage against Meath, hopefully we can do the job and then go to Kildare with a bit of confidence.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll certainly need to get a bit of confidence. Looking at hurling in the wider picture, obviously last night a lot of people, I suppose, looking at Sunday Sport or Sunday League, Sunday, whatever it's called it these days, and there was a kind of a bit maybe at the back of it where they were kind of sort out the whole hurling calendar and everything, and we had the Westmead manager, and we had the Loud captain, and we had James's friend Mr. Sheehy from Tipperary as well on it, trying to say that his own club were struggling along. James, hurling is struggling. It mightn't be maybe come Liam McCarthy Day when Croagh Park fills and there's people all over the place, whether it is Limerick or Kilkenny or maybe whatever, Cork or Waterford might get there. But underneath the table, I mean, the sport itself, it certainly is struggling.
I don't know. I sat and watched three hurling games Sunday, Donald. No, you won't never believe that. I watched Waterford and Clare. I watched Dublin, I watched Antrim, and I watched Galway, and I watched Tibb. Like, we were in a Joe McDonough final against Antrim a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
That Antrim team was a super team. They put Dublin, they should have beaten Dublin, very unlucky to concede a soft goal and got caught.
And that's an Antrim team that we nearly beat.
That's a fact. And these guys, that you can see it, and you saw what Westmeath did to Limerick. You saw Westmeath came in 6-7 points to Limerick. We wouldn't come in 20 points of them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you wonder. I wouldn't be too disheartened by hurling at all. It's just some counties seem to be maybe going on the right track. I won't call it the right track. Are we on the? I don't think we're on the right track. But we are not getting the success that these counties are. Antrim moved on an awful lot. But then again, you look at these teams, and I don't. This is something I see myself. The level your clubs are at in the county is nowhere near where it needs to be. You see now in Antrim, they have All Ireland senior club hurling teams that can win All Ireland's. They won it. Lockheed Chambers and those guys, they won it. They're lying. They've been there. They won All Ireland clubs. You see the Westmeath boys, Clonkill, they have been competing at senior level in Leinster for ages. Now the Kildare lads, Naas, are competing in senior club level in Leinster. We're still intermediate level in Munster. We're not where we should be.
Yeah,
that's club level.
But Naas, you mentioned Naas. I mean, Naas have won the last five hurling titles, blowing Kildare. I mean, St. Thomas's, I think, have won maybe 8 out of 10 or 7 out of 9, and certainly in Galway. We're seeing clubs kind of dominate. But I mean, for the sport to flourish, you need more clubs than that. And obviously, went back up Tantrum. But I mean, you can mention Dunleary or Lochiel Shamrocks. But I mean, there's not many more coming through. So I mean, is it being kind of strangled by bigger clubs?
It seems to me. You can see it with Naas. I'm just saying that Naas, mm-hmm. for example, because we've come across him in the All-Ireland Intermediate Final, and you see the path that they have gone on. And it is, I won't say super close, but then you come into Dublin Hurling, you wonder, why isn't Dublin Hurling any better? You look at the Dublin Senior Championship in Hurling, that's a very, very good championship. And you can see a lot of games, if you watch TG Carr, you'll see a lot of their championship games are on that. But Westmeath seems to be going the right way. And even the Carlow lads, Mount St. Leinster Rangers, they were in a...
That's right, they won the Leinster,
a couple of years ago as well. Like, so, like, you have... They've got strong clubs. And, like, that's not... You see the Offaly's. Offaly had a great game against Wexford as well at the weekend. Like, and Offaly weren't too... We weren't too far off Offaly again last year. Like, puck of a ball, we could have beaten Offaly. It's like a sliding doors kind of moment here. We're going through a real weird kind of situation where Westmeath, Offaly, Antrim, their teams we were on par with, if not beating all of them, to get to Joe McDonald finals and playing them in Joe McDonald finals, and suddenly we could be basking down in the bottom with Jesus Christ, the Roscommon's, Kildare's, Meats, and they're up with the likes of maybe Wexford, Laois, Offaly, all those guys, the second tier, the second rung, you could say, below the big boys. So, Christ, we've dropped a good bit.
Mm-hmm. Rich Tarrant, obviously, James McCarthy being a Kilmoyle man, ain't going to mention the Ballyduff superstar of the week in the hurling world playing for London. 3-11, that's some clipping?
Yeah, of course. Mr. Goulding has always been an outstanding hurler. And before I forget it, I want to remind James of a little. The Dublin success was backbone by Ballyheim and Dara Power. He was moulded in Ballyheim, James. Moulded in England. He had the power. No, he was no stand. Dara was an outstanding hurler. I was down to his dad on Saturday on the beach, and you know, we're very proud of him. A great young fella. But Jack, well, I mean, Jack is an outstanding hurler, and an awful loss to Kerry, of course. It's disappointing that Jack, you know, couldn't have been kept here. I think that's the bone of contention by a lot of people. But I mean, all the Gouldings are fantastic. Hurling, football, soccer, they're outstanding athletes. And Jack, you know, when he was in the Kerry jersey, gave it 100%. And fair play to him. 3-11 is great scoring at the weekend.
Fair play. Come here, we'll wrap it up because obviously the positivity is dying on us a small bit. But I have a couple of comments to fly at you before I wrap it up next minute or two. Donald, Kerry Hurling is heading into a dark place for the moment. The players are lacking big time experience, and the only place they will get that is on the field from beatings like this. More than ever, it will take time. I think that's fairly a balanced comment, Richard, is it?
I would say it's a bit negative, to be honest with you. A beating. I wouldn't say it was a beating.
All right, okay.
You know, I mean, at the end of the day, like, they dominated the first half. Yes, mm-hmm. The third quarter, their inexperience showed. But to say they're totally out of their depth, as I would suggest, I mean, they may be out of their depth, let's say, in the Munster Championship, but I wouldn't say they're out of their depth in Division 2A. But it will take time at the same time. And as I said earlier, now, when you lose so many players, it's going to be difficult, and you know, we can't dress it up any other way.
Yeah.
But no, these lads are good hurlers. The under 20 performance last year was very, very positive in Leinster. I thought these are good lads. They're good hurlers. Give them time, and they will deliver.
Absolutely. We'll finish up with the last comment. This is probably a little bit more valid for Richard. Jack O'Connor would find it impossible if he lost 15 of last year's side. So I think people need to get a little bit of perspective. And then another quick one here. Brendan Barrett's injury was crucial for Kerry, especially when they were lacking players of big experience. I was disappointed the way that some of our players didn't show up in the second half. And then it goes on to say that 4 points was kind of a real kind of low return, considering that Down got so many points in the first half. But sure, that's it. It's all about opinions, lads. If you didn't have them, nobody would be listening to us. Come here, James McCarthy. Did you go to bed early last night?
No, Donald, unfortunately, I stayed up to watch the Chiefs. I'm not going to be a 49ers or Chiefs fan now. I'm totally impartial as a Patriots fan, but I did stay up and watch it. It was a long day of sport now. 3 games of hurling and the Super Bowl, I'm worn out.
God almighty. And poor Andy Reid nearly got killed, I heard, did he?
He wouldn't last knock
out, though. He never last. Well, on that note, we'll take a break, and after the break, we talk to the Carnivory champions, Mersey-Mount Hawk Tralee.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
Now a couple more comments on the hurling. Donald Down are a very decent side and have been for years. They needed that win a lot more than we did. And then the guy asks, why was there 4 changes made before the team ahead of Troy? Well, the boys are gone now, but I'd imagine they probably weren't there to play, I suppose, or whatever they got around. Now, hopefully you were in Tralee on Saturday. It really was the battle of Tralee schools, which was a really unique, I suppose, feature. Mersey-Mount Hawk versus Tralee CBS. Everybody had drawn their own lines. Clubs were fighting mad with each other and the whole lot. Posters were up. But in the end, it was Mersey-Mount Hawk. They are the Carnivory champions and the cup is here. Now, the last time that was won, it was during kind of COVID-y time and the sim couldn't arrive. So we're delighted to have actually players in and that we can chat to. And we're delighted to have Bobby Brown, Austin Stacks. He said he was in and around Tralee, but you know, when he had to write it down, he'd put down Stacks. He wouldn't put down Mitchell's or any of those other clubs. So he's there. Niall Collins out the road in Ballymac. Gary O'Riordan is Ard Firth. Gary's going to give us loads of chat tonight. Ordon Ferris is there as well from Ard Firth. And Luke Mulligan keeping an eye on them all as he was on the sideline the last day. Well, first of all, Luke, congratulations. Have you kind of got your heads around what you've done and what you've achieved? I know people will say, oh, we went into the game and we were going to win it and we had it, but the enormity of the achievement, it's there now, it's sitting in front of you, and you've even got the Mount Hawk colour still on it.
No, I suppose beforehand there's a big build up, and being a local rival game, 2 Tralee teams, we were so focused on the game itself. It's kind of only the last day or two we've really kind of let it sink in, winning it. I think it was our first final as well, and going in as favourites, I suppose that extra bit of pressure, but this was more of a sense of relief afterwards, just getting over the line. And I think it was so important for this bunch and the school to do it on the day.
Mm-hmm. Every now and again you get a good bunch in a school that kind of gel together from year one or first year and all the way up. This has been this story with this team.
Yeah, I suppose the boys now here in 6th year, and the 5th year's behind them, Paddy and Tomas and them. Just 2 unbelievable years. I think you've 20 really good footballers from both years, and I know they missed out in COVID for a year or two of school football, maybe under 15, but from 16 and a half the last couple of years they've really pushed each other on, and because we have the numbers and the depth, it's really stood to us, and it's testament to the boys for pushing it on over the last couple of years.
Mm. Is there more pressure on you and Aidan when you use the word, you know, we have 20 good footballers, loads of depth? Is there more pressure then on delivering?
I suppose there is. Like the last day, we knew we were favourites going in, and the Green had the tradition, but we had the favourites tagging. There is that extra bit of pressure with a school team, because you don't have the same team every year, and if you don't win it this year, these boys won't be coming back next year to win it. And it's on the day, and with 5 minutes to go at the last, they didn't look too good, but in fairness to the lads, especially the fellas here, they pushed it over the line for us, and it was just a massive sense of relief, and then the celebrations kind of came afterwards.
Yeah, Adrian Ferris, 5 minutes to go, you know, you were nearly there, and then bang, penalty, God, turn around. How hard did you dig to get out of that and get over the line from there?
Yeah, I suppose there was a bit of pressure on in. I was a bit worried, like, but I had faith in the boys. They showed great resilience there towards the end. I was talking to Petty just after we got the penalty, and I said, we need a response, and thankfully we got it, and it was vital.
God almighty, poor old Petty would put the pressure on, was it? Come here to me. Teams win, you have great individuals, you have great teams, but obviously it's a campaign and it's over a campaign. But all the way through the campaign, Adrian, you played really good expressive football, you won by fairly decent margins as well, and you had a massive semi-final.
Yeah, I suppose it was great to be winning every game, I suppose, but at the same time, like, we've always stuff to improve on and where we can get further and better on, and like no game's ever perfect, like, so we just have to take the positives from it too and look to see where we can improve on.
Yeah, but it's great to get out the other side and put a cup in your hand and give it around the town. Come here, Bobby Byrne. For all the Austin Sex fellas that are happy, there's a good share of them not too happy, is there?
Yeah, I suppose, look, when you're playing a final and it's two Tralee teams, you're going to have fellas from the same club that are going to be on opposite sides on the day. With that being said, though, I think it's nothing personal, like, it's just business on the day, like, you know, you're there representing your school, you have your school colours on at that stage, it's not the club colours, so, and sure, look, everyone's there shaking hands at the end of the day, there can only be one outcome, I suppose, like, you know, but... there's no grudges or nothing hold afterwards. It's all left out on the pitch, and that's the main thing.
And of course, the other side of it is that a club team can hedge its bets. It knows that there's two Tralee teams in the final. We've got five on one team and we've got six on the other team or whatever. So obviously they're going to have winners of some sort. But it still must be nice to go back to tell the other Sexvillers, look, I won this.
Yeah, I suppose there'll be a bit of banter afterwards and stuff like that, all right. But at the same time, you'd want to cross the line at the same time, because, you know, some fellas, it's their last time wearing it, for the Stacks fellas playing for the Greens, it's the last time wearing their their school colours, like, so, you know, if it was the other way around, you wouldn't want to be kind of the bearer of bad news. Yeah.
That's a great point that you're raising there. Now, I mean, you have your club, you have your county for some people, but you have your school as well, and there's a proud tradition within schools and the whole lot. And I remember a couple of years ago, I'd be at Mercy Mount Hawk, wouldn't have been in the draw for this, or they'd been maybe down around, I don't know, C maybe, or sometimes D even. But I mean, are you conscious of the fact that you have brought that tradition, which is, you know, the work is still as hard when you're at a D or a C level as well. I mean, it's still being put in, you're still training as hard as you have, but now you're at a level where you're one from one, your name is going to go on that with all the great names from across the county and even across Munster, and you've achieved it. Does that sink in, or is that something that might sink in 20 years' time when fellas will say it to you?
Yeah, I suppose you could think that you have it all sunk in now at this stage and you're relishing the moments, but I suppose the real kind of positives and the memories are probably still to come yet when you're looking back on it in years' time, thinking about the good old days and playing with your mates in school and all that stuff. So, yeah, it's really enjoyable now, but I'm sure looking back on it in a couple of years' time will probably be as enjoyable, if not maybe even more so.
Absolutely, you'll always remember your school days, that is 100% sure. Niall Collins, was there big celebrations in Ballymac? You're sure you're an easy group, aren't you?
Yeah, well, most celebrations aren't in Ballymac. We went out to Erfurt, so
all right.
Sure, you were enjoying our few nights there, so yeah.
God, a mighty nights even, my God. You not have a semi-final to play or something?
Yeah, it's a 12 days time now, we say. Yeah. Enjoy the weekend anyway.
Come here, Niall. The final whistle goes. Obviously, I mean, you're involved in the game. I mean, it has ups and it has downs. You were ahead in control for an awful lot of it. Then you had a little wobble towards the end. Not a wobble enough that you were going to get caught or anything, but you still kind of pulled away at the end when you needed to. But the final whistle goes. I mean, what happens? Who was the first fellow you ran to or ran over you, or who was the first mother in or what?
It's all a blur at this stage. I remember just running wild and then dropping to my knees, and just, it's relief though. It's the biggest thing, because like the Green, they're a great tradition, great school, and when they got that penalty and went in the last 5 minutes, just like, we have to turn it on here and let's just give it hard for the next 5 minutes, and we did that. And when the referee whistled and Ben Murphy knocked it down, I think to me, and I just hand passed it to my left, and I think it was either Paddy or it was James Fisher or someone to my left, and I hand passed and he blew the whistle, and just relief then it's over and we've done it and all our hard work is paid off for the year, and just a great feeling then, like then just the celebration sets in and just it's a delight really.
Yeah, and of course you're playing in front of 3,500 people. When was the last time you done that?
I suppose I had a big enough game as well against, it didn't end at the exact, my result that day.
You had a happier ending this time.
Had a happier ending this time, thank God, yeah. So.
Good stuff. We won't mention Listowel, God.
No,
how would they spoil it tonight? Yeah, absolutely. It's an interesting point, actually, that you mentioned that final and this final, because not many players this age will have played in front of two big crowds in Austin Stack Park in the one season, I suppose, maybe coming off the back of last season. Do you get nerves?
Oh yeah, I do, but let's say the Ballymac final, I learned a lot from that day. Like, it wasn't my best performance, and I realised just you have to earn your right to play in Austin Stack Park, really, and it's hard work how you earn your right to play there. Mm-hmm. And I said, look, I'll give it my all, because I wasn't happy with how I played it with that final. I said, I'll give it my all on Saturday and earn the right to play and earn the right for the rest of the boys to play, and that's what this team's built on, all hard work. Mr. Mulligan, Mr. Costello, Mr. O'Shea, that's what they instill in us every day. It's hard work, you earn your right to play, and we did that all year, and like I didn't think we probably deserved to win it, I think, because hard work does end up winning games, and I feel like if we worked hard enough we'd win, and I suppose we did. So
absolutely, you're not going to stop working hard now, are you, because you've only half the job done maybe, and you're advising something else. Come here to me, the other Hartford man, Gary O'Riordan.
Yeah.
You're the quieter of the two, are you?
I am, yeah.
You might talk to me now at least. Come here to me. 3,500 people, obviously. I'm going to ask the same question again. Yeah. No, obviously you know Hartford didn't play in front of 3,500 people somewhere this year, have you?
No.
Safe enough. So we'll ask the question again. Playing in front of that crowd, that huge crowd, and then there's this unique kind of rivalry between the crowds as such. It's not your usual GA crowd that sit back and clap you. I mean, there's obviously plenty of noise and banter and songs and shouting and everything going on, the whole lot. I dare say it's a great atmosphere to play in.
It is, definitely, yeah. Like, you try and block out all of the noise and stuff in the stand, but it's hard. Like, you know, you still hear it, but that kind of drives you on too. Like, but you'll be nervous, sorry, playing it, but you just try and block it out and concentrate.
What's the most important thing when you head into a final like that? Is it that you're gearing up and you're saying, listen, I must win my first tackle, I must get my first ball? Is that what's going on in your head? Or?
Yeah, I suppose. Just trying to do as we always do, preparing the same way, working hard. They're the main things, really, and just let everything else take care of itself.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a routine when you arrive, obviously? Do you have the same warm-up? Is everything kind of the same, or...?
Yeah, we do everything the same for every game, and I think that builds a routine, you know, and keeps us... you sit now after all the games we've played, so yeah.
Did I call him Mr. Mulligan now, seeing that you called him Mr. Mulligan? He's a bit young to be Mr. Mulligan.
He is, yeah.
Mr. Mulligan is surely the father. Come here, Mr. Mulligan. We've gone around the table, we've asked kind of sensible enough questions, and to be very fair, got great answers, very grown up answers, very kind of mature answers. Is that the sign of the team, that there's a maturity in them as young men as well as footballers?
Yeah, they're, as I said earlier, they're an unbelievable bunch. I think going in at half time the last day, they were visibly, you probably saw it on the pitch, upset with each other, and more upset with themselves as well, because the standards they set are so high. Even the first half, the last day, we were 5 points up at half time with a bit of a breeze, and most teams would go in happy. We didn't play our best, but they knew that there was so much more in them, and they expect so much more in them, and they push each other as much as they push themselves to strive for better. And it's not in a way that you're giving out, it's just they know that they can perform to a certain level, and it's just easy as coaches then, because they, as I said before, they push it, they lead it, and when the standards are dropping, we don't have to step in because they say to each other anyway.
Mm-hmm. It's easier so when, like, obviously every school will have a team that's driven, but when it comes to a stage when all the players, and I mean obviously Niall is talking about being in the county junior final, and all the players are playing at a very high standard within the clubs and as well, does that make it easier to communicate with players? They kind of are on board with what needs to be done.
Exactly, like these fellas here sitting next to me played in massive games, whether it was with the county minor team, whether with district county championship last year, big school games and big hurling games, and they're used to it, and they know what's expected on certain days, and they know that at certain times in the match, especially the last day, 5-10 minutes to go, there's very little coaching you can do. So when we went level the last day, it was fellas like Niall and Daniel Kirby and Tomás and Paddy, they stepped up in that last 10 minutes, and that's just a sign and testament to them. And as I said, in them couple of minutes where the game is on the line, they really stepped up and pull us over the line at the end.
Absolutely. Do you want a half-time break, do you? I say we're a few points up, to be fair. We'll take a quick break and we'll be back after this.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
Now you're very welcome back to Terrace Talk here with Donal Barry. We're here till 8 o'clock this evening. After 7 o'clock we will be chatting Ralling and we will be talking Kerry FC as they begin their new season next Friday night. Of course they're playing Cork City away and we caught up with their manager and a couple of their new players, and Dermot Kearney will be in to discuss that with us. Currently we have the Merseymount Hawk team, I suppose I'm going to say team, well, an awful lot of them I suppose, not all of them, the Corneyvree champions of course after they won all that Tralee Derby of course on Saturday, and we've been joined by Bobby Bourne of Austin Stacks, Niall Collins, Belly Mac, Gary Reardon and Oran Ferris, both Ardfert of course, and Luke Mulligan, St. Pat's. We were just talking off here, Luke, about how close two Tralee clubs are, and obviously you kind of mentioned that your good old club mate was on the other side as well, Liam Sullivan. On the build up to you kind of sending texts and WhatsApps and that kind of crack?
Yeah, we were actually texting more than we ever did the last couple of months.
Great friends.
Yeah, great friends. And then we became better friends, and then I think it was a Wednesday I sent the last message and he stopped responding, so I didn't send any more messages afterwards. But I texted him afterwards Saturday night again saying hard luck. And look, I suppose we've actually been involved with the Brendan's Miners, the two of us, over the last couple of years. So we'd both know players from both teams, and we'd played football with Liam for 20-25 years probably. And I suppose like the boys on the day, you shake hands afterwards and you try to win and you just become friends again.
Yeah.
Not just shortly afterwards, but it's probably hard in the kind of leading up to the game when you're so close to players in the opposition team. You know, you have that relationship that has to change probably for the last couple of days or week before the game.
Yeah. Do you get nervous yourself? I mean, obviously, I suppose some managers have been there for thousands and thousands of years and they kind of win, they lose, and next thing you're in a final of this level, you're going into your first one, you know, you everybody's wishing you well, you're kind of the farm team going in. I mean, people looking at your results and saying, God almighty, these crowd won't be caught at all. Is there a pressure on you? Is there a nervousness on you? Are you kind of a butterfly fella going in the morning, or does Aidan O'Shea knock that out of you?
No, I think all the management team, we kind of, I suppose, act differently before, and some people might be nervous leading up to it. Personally, I think it's kind of butterflies, it's more excitement. It's very different when if you're playing a game, you're just looking forward to it, and once the ball's thrown in, then you get nervous at moments and kind of ups and downs throughout the game. But again, you just have to trust the lads that they'll do it, and once the ball is thrown up, there's very little you can do to change things apart from making subs or slight adjustments on the field. But as I said earlier, with 5-10 minutes to go, that was all down to the boys to get us over the line. But when the penalty went, we were, I suppose, a sense of more than nerves that we felt. But thankfully, if we got over the line at the end.
When the penalty went in, the next ball is obviously the most crucial one to kick out. You must win it. God, if we lose this, you know, they're on top of us again. You dealt with that fairly favourably, didn't you?
Yeah, it was actually a massive moment, because my Tansy gave a great ball to Daniel Kirby, who actually ran up to the terrace side. And if we'd lost that kick out, I think we might have lost the game, because if the green had gone ahead, they might have beaten us. But he won that kick out, which is massive. And then I think the first score to go ahead again, we lost the ball and we won it back on their 21. Tomás kicked a great point, and that really kind of settled us down again. I think after that we never looked back.
Audrin, let's look back a small bit. I mean, obviously, are you in Mount Hawk 6 years?
Yeah, 6 years, yeah.
Oh, six memorable years. You must have played a lot of football in that time.
Not enough.
Oh my god, you're on the sideline for a while being injured, was it?
I'd like to play a few more years, so
yeah. Oh my god, how much he'll be going back. Come here, go back and walk me through the door, the very first day. Do you come out of Ardfert National School?
Yeah, super.
So you left there and you headed into town, just a small few miles in, big huge new building and the whole lot. Did you enjoy it straight away? Did you have to wait till the football arrived, or what? What drew you in?
No, I've always wanted to go there. I just knew that there was good footballers in there, which was my main reason to go in. And obviously it's different to the likes of the Green and all these other schools, which is what I liked, I suppose, about it. But I enjoyed it the second time I went in. I met new friends and everything, and it was enjoyable, yeah.
And you're playing football straight away, of course?
Of course, yeah.
Yeah. Can you remember your first time putting on the jersey? Who did you play? Who you were sent out against?
Jesus, no, it was a few years ago now. I can't really remember.
You said it was only six, God help us. But you can remember that, obviously, in the sense that Were some of these your teammates in first year and second year?
Definitely, yeah. They've been there since the very start, which is the most important thing about it, you know.
Has Bobby Byrne been there since then?
He has.
Yeah, he might have better memory than you, maybe. Can you remember the first real outing or the first couple of years, you know, where you kind of maybe won something or maybe didn't win anything at all, maybe just competed together as a team?
I suppose, remember in first year, the earliest game I can probably remember, I'd say, was out in Dingle, I think. We played a couple of games out there in the cold, blistery weather, like, and in first year, like, you know, there's a lot of fellas who are at different stages of growth and stuff, like, so the team's never really going to be all aligned and at the same stage, so we probably didn't have a very successful first year, but I remember Buddy telling us to always keep the foot down and work hard and everything, and you never know what happens in the future. And then, of course, with COVID hitting, then we probably missed under 15, I think it was, the Russell Cup. We missed that one. And then by the time we came out of COVID and fell into 16 and a half, just everyone had matured up along and we'd come together as a group really nicely. And I suppose through the Dunlow Cup and the Froom Cup, that probably really tied us all together really tight and knew that we have great potential in this team. If we work hard and stay together, we can go on to do great things, like... So yeah, I suppose it probably would have been the 16 and a half that season that probably, you know, we became aware that we knew that we could go on to win something bigger at senior level. Yeah.
Go back and mention something that everybody knows about but we don't discuss at all, is COVID. For ye, kind of, you were in what, second year, third year?
We would have been in second year when it hit, yeah.
Yeah. Talk to me about that kind of time away from school. I mean, obviously away from school, football closed down, the whole lot. It's something that in 10 years time nobody will believe at all that it actually happened and you had to sit at home for the whole lot. What went on in that part of your world? Did you kind of go in training in the backfield within the 5 kilometre rule?
Yeah, I suppose it was a weird time, alright, like you know, you're used to seeing your friends every day and going around kicking and stuff, and then of course one day you're told that you have to cut all of it out all of a sudden and you're not really ready for it. I suppose for me personally, I was lucky enough to have two older brothers at home to keep me occupied and keep the skills going, kicking in the garden and stuff like that. And then you've other fellas that you can see on the team. COVID actually almost brought them on and matured them more. Like, you see them going into COVID maybe more of a slender build, and they might come out having gone to the home gym and done all that stuff, and to be almost men coming out the other side of it. Mm-hmm. So I suppose there's two sides of it, really. Like, everyone has a different story of how lockdown treated them and stuff, but... for me personally, I think it was a growth period for me anyway.
Yeah. Did Niall Collins grow 2 feet during COVID, did he?
I don't know, I'm still going, I hope, anyway.
was it tough for you, Niall? I mean, obviously out in Ballymac, I mean, I suppose, I presume people were on the phone night and day, teacher and the whole lot, but that kind of thing where the football wasn't part of it, and it's interesting that you mentioned earlier that you missed the Russell Cup, because on the growth of school football, it's another big day out. I mean, the Russell Cup is a big one, and obviously, I suppose, Tralee CBS as well at the time, they won, but they couldn't go further in the competition as well, which kind of robbed them maybe of a semi-final, and who knows, maybe a prospective All-Ireland. But what was that like, Niall, that time?
Well, that time, I have two sisters and a brother, and there's 4 years. We're all born in 4 years, so it was 2v2s in every type of sport, and it was just ultra-competitive. And I suppose the four of us all came out better because we were fit, we were all running together, all playing football, basketball, soccer. I think we even had, I don't know, every type of sport you could name, we managed to try there. And I suppose I did come out with COVID better because I was fitter and I was stronger than before, because... I suppose I was small going in and a bit bigger coming out, so it did benefit me, I suppose. Looking back, it did. I suppose I grew up during it, I suppose you could say, like, from them years, all right, yeah.
Yeah, God, he grew up during it. Huh? Fair play. Out in Ardfirth, I suppose you had a beach, had you?
We did, yeah, we had a beach. We were trying to do a small bit of running on it, as much as we could.
What's
anyway.
A small bit running out in Ardfirth now when you say a small bit running?
Yeah, not too much. just trying to keep us going, you know.
Did you find it tough out in Ardfirth? I mean, obviously, look, you have the beach, you have the access, the whole lot, but you're still cut off from your friends, you're still cut off from playing football.
Yeah.
And club-wise as well, obviously, not the school, I mean, and the whole lot. I mean, and it wasn't as if it was only for a weekend, like.
Yeah, I know, I suppose it was a lonely enough all time. Out of school, you know, on your own, trying to do a bit of training with a few fellas from Ardfirth and stuff, but there's only so much you can do trying to stay inside the 5 kilometres and all that.
I know, it was kind of tough actually. Yeah. Thinking about it. Come here to me, let's move on from COVID and we close that door. Your memories of playing early with the schools, I mean, where did you come along in the scene?
I suppose we always remember playing in first year, second year, and our biggest memory is probably winning the Dunlop Cup under 16 and a half. That really brought us together as a team, you know, and it made us...
Did that put you on the map? I mean, people finally said, oh, wow, Jesus, these guys have to win the Dunlop Cup, because that is kind of the big step before you take the big next step.
Yeah, I'd say so, yeah. That was the first A trophy we won as a school.
Did you beat in that final?
Milltown.
Okay.
Yeah, that was a big game. And then a few months after that, we won the Frome Cup, the Munster under 16 and a half. So, yeah, that really kind of made us realise that we had a good team and if we work hard enough.
When you finally made the jump into the competition, Luke Mulligan, obviously people are looking at it and they say, look, there's public school behind, there's the same Clash and Skill, you kind of come up and come down, Milltown were in it, you know, out their own Castle Island they're in it now as well for a while as well. Is that a reward for all the hard work that you can finally go in? I mean, the first time the draw was made, Mount Hawk was in it. How exciting was that?
It was, I suppose, incredible, great to be part of. I think we're in Corner of Reno maybe 7-8 years altogether, and just being in the A competition, I think it's so important for a town school, a school our size, to grow, to be in the A competition, whether you win it or not, to be playing at that level for prospective students coming into the school, and also for the for students in the school developing as footballers, if they want to progress further, play with Kerry Minors, with the districts, whatever it is, they have to be playing at that high standard. And it's really stood to these fellas over the years playing at that level, and you can see playing the games the last day, they're not phased, they're used to that environment, and it just kind of, it'll hopefully improve or help their further careers as well.
Oran, the support of families, I mean, obviously it is massive. I mean, you didn't get down to Hartford the very first day at what, 4 or 5 years old? Was there a helmet put on you, or was there a slitter put in your hand, or maybe that happened as well? But I mean, looking back at it now, that journey wouldn't have even started, I presume, only for kind of family support.
Family support is massive for every athlete growing up, I suppose. I was lucky to have even a bigger family in effort itself, the village. It really drove us on the last couple of years, and they all gave us belief that we didn't really have at the time, I suppose. But like the likes of Gary here and stuff, they all drive on each other, and it's a proper family. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When you come from Ardfert, I mean, and you kind of come into the thing, and obviously everybody growing up with the big clubs, Austin Stacks, Kieran O'Rahilly's, John Mitchell's, the whole lot, you're kind of coming from a small club, even though you were a senior club and a very good senior club with a very proud history, and you won your All-Irelands at junior and intermediate level as well. Is there more pressure on you from that, or do you say, here, what's this about?
Yeah, no, I suppose effort always thrives on being the underdogs all the years in the past. Like, and I've been with them, I suppose, as a little kid, and I've realised where they've gotten to and what they've achieved just by being a small village, and obviously no big names, of course, no Kerry seniors at the time, I suppose. And that just motivates me to do well for effort as such, and the same as Gary, I think. Yeah.
You wear the art for heart all the time, you do.
Lead black.
You're a bit on the fiery side, so are you? come here, same for yourself, Bobby, of course. I mean, you're representing a club, I suppose, that has a huge tradition, and obviously, what is it, Rock Street and the Street of Champions and the whole lot, and they're painting murals on the ball. These little fellas coming in from Ardfert, I mean, they've only won junior All-Irelands, intermediate All-Irelands, you know, you've got the real series. Is there more pressure on you maybe to kind of uphold that kind of tradition that, I don't know, your father talks about, your grandfather talks about, or God knows the whole town talks about at times? Is there more pressure on you? Is there more pressure, particularly now, because people will say, oh, Austin Stacks now slipped down now to whatever. But the last day, the narrative out of this match was how good this game was for senior football in Tralee, in the sense that you now had players that were coming through this level who will eventually step onto the senior team. Does that excite you, or you know?
Yeah, I suppose for me personally, I wouldn't really consider it as a pressure. I'd more like consider it as a privilege almost when you look at the team sheet to see so many fellas from your club making up the team. Like, you know, it's something that you take a bit of pride in as well. Like, and I suppose it's just nice to, you know, if you're throwing on a club jersey, then to throw on a school jersey, it's nice to be mixing with your club mates and then your school mates as well, that you wouldn't get, they usually be playing against, like, you know.
Yeah.
So it's nice to get a mix of stuff, and
I'd say you're hanging around with Kieran Don here because you have all the good answers tonight. I mean, God, you're pulling all the six markers out of the whole lot. Very impressive. Come here down to Ballymac. I mean, obviously, you're a huge club, obviously. I mean, what are you, the biggest parish in Ireland?
Yeah, we are, right.
Come here to me. Coming from Ballymac, I mean, obviously, your family support. I mean, the last day, had you, or what, 10 rows of seats taken over?
The support Ballymac has given, not just me, but everyone else in the Mount, the few other boys in Mount Hawk, and even the few boys that we're playing against from Ballymac in the Green. Ballymac, just the support is, it's always there and it always will be there. We're a growing club as well. Like, we have a new gym below, they're redeveloping the field now. Things are going well for Ballymac and it's looking good, so hopefully it keeps going well now. So, yeah.
Gary, do you bleed black?
I do, yeah. And blue as well for Harlan.
We're in Hurley. Come here, we're running out of time. We'll run quickly on to the next thing. Congratulations on the cup, obviously, be taking it with you. Hopefully. Speak to me very quickly about the Bishop O'Sullivan. Obviously, that's an important one as well. That's the Kerry Champions, which is huge as well. Very important.
Yeah, I suppose, like the Dunlow 2 years ago, winning your first title at senior level is a massive, massive, massive kind of burden off your shoulders, and it just gives you the confidence going forward that we know, especially playing the same a second time, it's hard enough to beat them once, but against them the second time, we knew if we played their potential, we could beat them. And winning that cup the first time, it kind of eases the pressure. And with this team, if we hadn't won one trophy, I think it would have given us even more pressure the last day, but having that Sullivan Cup definitely eased that burden.
Yeah, and of course the pressure doesn't stop for the management, of course, because you're in an All-Ireland semi-final now. It's not as if like you can kind of rest. Is this a free shot for you?
I think it is in a way. Like, our aim at the start of the year was Aidan always harped on about it, playing at the weekend. Normally the semi-finals at the weekend, but it was a weekday, so we had to win one more game. And getting over, I suppose, if we were honest about it, Corner 3 was our main aim. It's a free shot in terms of we've one game away from playing in Croke Park, which is a massive achievement in itself. Like, we know we're going to be up against it. We just had a look at Naas, I think, Saturday week. They've won, is it 5 of the last 6 Leinster titles? They, just looking through their team sheet, they had 7 Kildare Miners 2 years ago, 6 last year. So, like, they're a powerhouse of Leinster football. They're the equivalent of the same here, and we know we're going up against it, but I think if we prepare right, like we have that first all the games so far, and we're mentally and physically right, then we'll give it our best shot, and you never know on the day.
Mm-hmm. Of course, you'll have massive support travelling as well the next day. I mean, the support, how important is it, to get all the, I was going to call them kids, but I suppose you don't call yourselves kids at all anymore, do you? How important is it for the support that you're going to bring in to kind of carry as many as you can if they can travel or what?
Oh, really important. You could see the last day, like, the Green had massive noise, and we brought massive noise as well, and it's just, especially in the moments where you need it, a couple of moments in the game where you might be under pressure, then a couple of 100 fans or a couple of 1,000 the last day really helped us bring us over the line, and hopefully we get a couple of buses going the next day, and that can be the difference, especially in close games. It can be worth a point or two either way.
Mm-hmm. And of course there is a huge tradition, or a growing tradition, of ladies football inside the school as well. Munster champions, Amanda Broston, obviously, I better give her a tick, being a former Kerry player, and Louise is inside there as well. How important is that to add to kind of the growing tradition that, you know, GAA is strong, ladies football is strong, it's growing, it's developing, and it's in safe hands?
Well, it's in very safe hands in the school. Ladies football and ladies sport in general is thriving in the school. Last year they lost the All-Ireland B final. This year they're in the Munster A semi-final, so the first time that both senior teams are in the A competition. And I think we had, is it 80, 90 first year girls playing football this year, and in fairness to Louise and Amanda and a few other teachers down there, they're putting massive work into it, and you can see that the girls sport down there is growing from strength to strength every single year, and we're just trying to keep up, to be honest. Mm.
And a quick word on poor old Buddy. Sure, obviously he wouldn't have started, but Buddy's there a long time.
Buddy's there from the very beginning. I knew Buddy years even before I started teaching him on talk. He's one of a kind. He's a unique individual, and it was a special moment the last day. I think there wasn't too many dries in the stadium when they saw Oran lift the cup with him. I think that picture will go up in the school in the wall, and I think people will remember forever. He's, as I said, a unique individual, a unique personality, and it was unbelievable that we could bring the cup for him, or win it for him.
Did he give you much advice, Buddy?
He did. He was giving us a bit of information before the game, the day before, I think. His voice really helped, I suppose, with the last 6 years. He's always been there throughout the years, having a bit of crack too at the same time, and it was great to see him smile and be happy with the trophy.
He didn't write the speech for it, did he?
No, definitely not.
Definitely not. Listen, guys, thanks very much. The very best of luck in the All-Ireland semi-final. Gary Reardon, isn't that amazing when I say All-Ireland semi-final, huh?
It is, hard to believe.
Yeah, that's nearly better now than playing Kilmaile in a hurling match, is it?
I don't know about that.
Oh, God, Jesus, poor old Kilmaile. Very best of luck, Mr. Collins.
Thanks very much.
Next time I might even be able to see you if the cup isn't as big as the Corniveree. It's a big enough cup, isn't it? Yeah, it's a pretty big cup, isn't it?
Yeah, it's lovely. Now I was an admirer there at last, and sure, it's nearly surreal. Like, you Mount Hawk 6 years and winning a Corniveree. I suppose the aim for me, and I suppose the boys here, being footballers their whole lives, Corniveree is the pinnacle of school football in Munster. So winning it, it's surreal now, and it hasn't sunk in yet for me anyway, because sort of riding the wave, and I suppose we know this is our last year, and that we'll just keep going and keep going. Hopefully.
Are you still signing autographs on it?
Huh?
Are you still signing autographs because of it? The autographs will come in a game or two. Listen, guys, the very best of luck. It was a pleasure to have you here this evening. I have to say, fantastic. When you say be early, I mean, obviously early is very early. So you're absolutely flying. The best of luck to Mr. Costlow and Mr. O'Shea and obviously Mr. Mulligan here. Have you ever seen Mr. Mulligan play football?
I've played against him, all right, yeah.
Played against him, all right, huh?
Yeah. I got 1-2 that day, I think.
Did you?
Yeah.
My gosh. Well,
I couldn't catch him.
It was only Belly Mac anyway. Listen, guys, thanks very much. It was great to have you here this evening. And also, I suppose, a big well done too to Tralee CBS and all the Kerry sides that are in, because there tends to be a huge Kerry feel about the whole thing. You know, a couple of Cork teams in between. Clashnaskilly, my own crowd too as well. You know, we had to travel about 900 miles up to Cork to play a crowd 4 miles down the road. But anyway, we won't mention that too often. Guys, the very best of luck. Up after the break, after 7 o'clock, we will talk rallying with William Crichton. And after 7:30, we will talk Kerry FC, and we will look ahead to the season ahead, which is a very exciting season because it's their second year in the League of Ireland, and hopefully things will go much better this year.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
County Down's William Crichton is set for his first WRC2 campaign following his junior WRC win in 2023, and I'm absolutely delighted to have him on the line all the way live from Sweden and in the company as well of Kerry motorsports journalists Sean Moriarty and Ivan Hurley, the men who really know what's going on. Come here to me, William Crichton, are you really excited stepping up, I suppose, from kind of maybe novice to senior, maybe, is it?
Yeah, thanks first for having me on. Yeah, this weekend is our first event in the WRC2 class after we won the junior WRC last year. So it's a step up in car, and the competition over the last couple of years in this class has been really high. A lot of drivers, you know, winning this class are trying to step up then into the top category of the sport. So, you know, you're able to pitch yourself against some of the best drivers in the world, and that's what I'm excited to do. But really excited to get started this weekend. We had a full day testing in the car to get ready today, and that went really well.
Mm-hmm. Before we get on to it, I kind of want to maybe step back a small bit and go through maybe the pathway, because obviously there's a big, I suppose, Kerry Forestry Rally that's on this week, and it's kind of maybe the entry level for a lot of people who are kind of getting involved in the sport, and you probably came in the back door as well through the entry level. Maybe chart your way through and maybe the help you might have got along the way with the academy as well, maybe.
Yeah, there's a really good pathway into junior rallying now, and it's similar to what I had. But it's got really it's improved quite a lot as well since then. So it's a class called the Junior 1000, and it's a 1 litre fairly standard rally car, but at the same time a proper, safe, well built car that I think it's 14 to 17 year olds can start rallying and really begin doing the rally that I or any other senior competitor could go do back home. And you know, for kids to have that opportunity at such a young age to drive, it's in the forests, learn how to control a car on a narrow Irish you know, forest track before they've got their proper road license is a really good opportunity. And you know, those kids can do that. They drive the full stage, the full event that any other competitor will do, but then to get from the end of one stage to the start of the next, their co-driver drives the car on the road section. So it's a really good opportunity. And you know, the winner from that, there's a Craig Breen Foundation that you know, presents an award that can then help drivers take the next step into a higher level car. And you know, from then on, they can follow an FIA rally pyramid, which is once you get through one step, you can approach the next step, and the car just keeps getting bigger. And you know, you can drive those cars anywhere in the world, and they're recognized at an international level. So I followed that pyramid from the Junior 1000 class all the way now to what we call Rally 2. And the only step after that is Rally 1 with the top manufacturers in the sport. So, you know, there's a clear pathway there. And I've been working with the Motorsport Ireland Rally Academy for quite a number of years now. And, you know, that was always our plan to follow that pathway. And it's working out pretty well so far.
I'll come in there, William, as well. Just a greeting from Sweden, of course. But it's very interesting to think that when we look at the entry list of Rally Sweden this weekend, that Motorsport Ireland competition license holders got representation in the Rally 1 category with Aaron Johnson, Rally 2 category with yourself and your co-driver Liam Regan, and the Junior Rally 3 category with Eamon Kelly and Conor Moan. We're talking a lot down here in County Kerry about bringing the WRC here in 25, 26 or 27, but there's a great Irish involvement in the sport throughout the world, and it's going to be a very, very special occasion for ye guys to be coming home, regardless of which one of the three regions goes first, second or third. There must be a great sense of anticipation within the paddock of the World Rally Championship at the moment, thinking that after all these years on the road that we are actually coming home at some point.
For sure. I mean, okay, for Irish Rallying, we had a very difficult year last year, unfortunately for a number of reasons, but you know, when you look at the amount of crews that are competing at the top level of the sport, you know, it's in a really good place. And I've been lucky enough to compete in the WRC now for a number of seasons. And, you know, I see the atmosphere that these events bring to countries, towns, rural villages. And, you know, to be able to bring that back home and have that atmosphere, and, you know, it'll attract so many people who don't necessarily follow the sport closely, you know, the buzz it will create for them. And, you know, I think it will attract a lot of new people into the sport as well.
I suppose one of the big things is, of course, we're so excited here that it's been confirmed, I suppose, fingers crossed, it's coming down our way as well. And it's that new people. And I suppose in the last number of weeks, William, we've been trying to educate a very GAA county, which is a football supporting county, into, I suppose, the possibilities of what the sport can bring in. And we're trying to, I suppose, maybe learn as we go along as well. And then we see a guy like William Crichton, who is flying that flag, who is on his way up. He's going through the steps of the ladder, and he's, I suppose, maybe not at the top table, but that's where you're heading. Can you talk to us about winning the Junior last year and what that meant for you personally, and I suppose the amount of challenges that you had to go through to get there? I know that you came down to Kerry maybe a couple of times, and you had a run around or rally the lakes as well, maybe at a younger age as well, maybe getting that campaign underway. But last year's campaign, I mean, talk to us as waving that Irish flag along the way as well.
Yeah, I mean, last year's campaign was, you know, there was a lot went on behind the scenes before then, as I said, through the Junior 1000, and then into the classes after that, and even competing, you know, in the British Rally Championship, we won the Junior BRC, and that gave us an opportunity to drive the next level of car. So a lot went on with the Motorsport Ireland Rally Academy to get to the point that we could even be in the Junior WRC, and we did it a couple of seasons, and last year we really targeted it as this was the year that we wanted to try and fight for the victory. And we had plenty of challenges along the way, but you know, even to get to that level of competition financially is a challenge in its own right. But then whenever you get there, you know, there's so much work that has to be put in, you know, obviously from my side, Liam's side, in the co-driving, fitness, mental fitness. So there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes that maybe not a lot of people see. But yeah, to win and to fly the flag, as I say, after some difficult times last year, it was nice and to bring that championship back home and give something for people to smile about was nice from us. We got a lot of pleasure from that, and you know, the way things panned out in Greece we had challenges with the car. The team really had to put their back up against the wall and do the best that they could, and there was a lot of things that fell our way. And I think, you know, in sport, whenever that happens, it makes it all the sweeter whenever you do win. But, you know, I think we had a difficult last event in Greece, but generally throughout the year we showed that we were you know, the quickest on all the events, and had, you know, winning pace throughout the whole year, really. So yeah, it was good for whenever it all came together in Greece.
And then the unique thing about the rally, of course, I mean, you're mentioning Greece, obviously, and people are thinking of going to the beach and getting 30 degree sunburn and the whole lot. Now you're in Sweden, heading back to a place where you have been successful and you've been around those roads again at maybe a higher level. Is it a huge advantage to go back to Sweden knowing that you performed quite well there previously?
Yeah, it's a big advantage to go back to an event that you've competed at before, especially whenever the event runs similar stages to previous years. So it's an event that I feel comfortable on. I mean, it's from the outside looking in, it looks a bit crazy. You're driving on ice and snow, but
how would you prepare for that? I mean, ice and snow, my God, there's people in Kerry now that wouldn't drive, you know, when people say it is cold. But I mean, you're competing at a level where you are speed, it is control, and it's ice and it's snow. I mean God knows, I mean, how do you prepare for that? Or you just have to go around, or is everybody in the same boat?
It's very difficult to prepare when obviously we don't have the conditions back home, and it's quite a unique rally. But the work that we did, you know, competing in the Junior WRC gave me great experience in Sweden, and that's, you know, that's really the key for whenever I now come in the next class. But, you know, you've got a narrow tyre with hundreds of studs that really spike into the ice and the snow, and that's where you get your grip. So as I say, it looks quite crazy from the outside looking in, but inside the car I can tell you it's a lot more controlled most of the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Come here to me. Going ahead for the season ahead, obviously, I mean, when you move to a new level, I mean, you understand, I suppose, the competitors and how difficult it is. But when you're going into it, I mean, what are the hopes for this year? What are the aims? I mean, obviously, you want to be competitive as you can. Is there something in your head? Is there a number? Is there a result? Is there a performance? What's in your head, boys, I suppose, for a target?
I guess I haven't set... I've set my own goals, but I haven't... necessarily, you know, picked a number or something like that. But, you know, I have to be realistic as well. You know, the guys I'm competing against are world class and have been at this level for several years. So especially whenever I'm now in Sweden and a lot of the Scandinavians are competing, I'm in their backyard. So, you know, I'm going to give it everything that I can do and really just try and focus on my own event, particularly at the start of the season now, and try and build on that. But, you know, we're here to be competitive, and as the year moves on, we're going to look to try and you know, keep improving and see what's possible.
Fair play to you. Well, listen, we opened the first hour with the Down Hurlers beating the Kerry Hurlers, so I suppose to have a Down man on for the second hour. Listen, William, we wish you the very, very best of luck. We'll be following the campaign. Hopefully, when you get around, you'll visit us once again in Kerry. And certainly now we'll be looking to see, can you stay on the snow and the ice over the couple of weeks? And, you know, the very best of luck through the year ahead, and stay safe, and your co-driver and your team and everybody that's involved with you, because you are right. I mean, it does take an incredible amount of work from so many different individuals, the whole lot, to put the car on the road, and from everything from mechanics all the way down. But we wish you a very safe season ahead, and hopefully you might come back to us maybe at the end of the season and give us an old chat. Hopefully our hurlers will have beaten you by then, and you might have an old championship or two as well for us. Okay,
thanks, and congratulations, you know, to everyone that's putting their effort in to have the WRC in Ireland, you know, wherever it goes for the first year. The fact that we have three locations that are capable of holding that magnitude of an event is really impressive, and, you know, I'm looking forward to the news that hopefully we all want.
Absolutely. Well said, William. That William Crichton, of course, County Downs. He is competing next weekend, of course, in the WRC 2 campaign following, of course, and he's the junior WRC champion as well from 2023. We take a break.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee. where being local means coming home.
World Rally Championships coming to Kerry, of course. We had Downs, William Crichton on the phone. How big a name might he be, Sean?
Well, he's on the absolute perfect trajectory. He spoke there about his time in the Junior 1000s, the entry level for 14 to 17 year olds, and the entry level is at its best is taking place in Castle Island this weekend with the Killarney Forestry Rally, with something like 22 of these junior 14 to 17 year old drivers taking part. He came through the ranks in junior 1000s up into, we'll say, lesser powerful cars, but a great example would be the current crop of Rally 4 cars, or Class 2 as they're known as in Ireland. An incredible entry in the Castle Island Rally for these Rally 2 drivers. Most of the drivers in Class 2 are representative or supported in some sort of way by the Rally Academy. So there's a whole project, if you like, that takes you from entry level up another level into Irish forestry rallying, up into Irish international rallying, into Europe, into the world. And if you picture that pyramid, William is just one step below the bottom rung on the ladder at the moment. An incredible achievement, incredible amount of work gone in to get him that far, but he's just one step below. He's in Division 2 of the World Championship. That's the best way you could put it for the ordinary punter.
Yeah, and Ivan, when we talk about Division 1 coming, obviously Division 2 is coming as well, and we kind of forget that an awful lot, and there is an awful lot of Irish involvement in it. How important is it for us to kind of maybe fast track our way to learn who these guys are so we can get out on the roadsides and support them?
Yeah, look, it's absolutely important. Obviously everyone focuses on Rally 1, it's the, you know, the top tier like that, but you have to remember this year M Sport Ford are running two Division 2 drivers from last year in their Division 1 programme in Gregoire Munster and Adrian Formose. So like, these lads are the future, they're the next level, and obviously some of them won't make it. It's like Kerry have 36 players in the panel but only 30 go to an All-Ireland. It's a similar ball game. So like, these drivers have to be well respected, and you don't know what you're watching when you see these dads, if they're going to make it up or down. And a lot of drivers in this category were in the Rally 1 cars, but maybe they were seen that there was going to be a better driver in the Rally 1, so they're back down in Rally 2. So it's highly competitive, as Will Crichton said there. But yeah, definitely, I think if you have a good interest in rallying, you'd know a good few of the names that are in the WRC 2 class, or the second division as it might be known. But these cars are just a very, very small step down. It's very marginal, and a lot of the cars as well are very, very similar, and you know, a lot of them actually drive the same cars, so it is very, very competitive, and there's so many different winners each week, it's very hard to call the winner of a championship in it as well. And of course then they pick kind of different rounds of the championship. They do, I think it's 7 rounds, Sean, the championship year, so they can pick 7 of the 13 different rounds that qualify for points. So oftentimes there could be a strange lead. If someone did the first 3, he could be well out in front of the championship, but he's only got 4 more rounds, and others could have all 7 to do. So it's kind of it's different to what we know as the Rally 1, where everyone goes and does every rally. But you'd imagine Ireland being in Europe, close to everything, as Sean said last week, going from maybe Finland to Ireland, it's not a huge logistic problem, it's not a huge cost. So I think we'd see a very large WRC 2 and WRC 3 programme come to Ireland as well when it does come in 2025.
Yeah, we heard William talk about Greece and how difficult it was down there, and then there's Sweden. Where will Ireland fit in that circle? Well, obviously we're not going to be snowing, hopefully, but
we'll be a national to Tarmac Rally, and strange enough that Ireland is renowned for its tarmac rallying. We have the Irish Tarmac Rally Championship, we have the Irish National Championship, both are run on closed roads. The most famous closed road locally is Moll's Gap. So the Irish round is going to be a tarmac rally. Possibly the only other two all tarmac rallies in the championship is Rally Croatia, which runs around mid-April time, and a new rally that came into the programme last year was the Rally of Central Europe, which operates between Germany, the Czech Republic and Austria, with a base in Germany, but stages near Prague. So a bit like our own story here, there's 3 different regions in the Central European Rally. So where this becomes unique is that the Irish tarmac is not like the European tarmac. It's smooth asphalt, or even if you look at Monte Carlo in the middle of January, technically a snow and ice rally, but the weather has changed that into a tarmac rally. But what you're talking about there is mountain passes, hairpin bins, similar to the Halte du Oise in the Tour de France. They're the kind of roads that you'll see in Monte Carlo. Here you've got bumpy, choppy tarmac, you've got even a typical route around here goes from the mountain pass of Miles Gap to a coastal road of Ardgroom to the farm tracks of Desmond's Grave. So there's, it's going to be unique in the sense that the drivers have to adapt to all this kind of a challenge. While nothing is concrete and nothing is set in stone, there is talks that this event will run sometime in August or September time. And I think that's going to be fantastic, because that's kind of your summer season, your blue skies. And the television footage that will present of the Irish stages, the Irish countryside, will be as iconic as the snow and ice of Sweden, the mountain passes of Monte Carlo, the jungle of the Safari Rally. And I suppose it's worth bringing the Safari Rally into these 13 rallies across the world are so unique in their own special way. And I think Ireland has a great possibility of carving that uniqueness into the wide Atlantic Way, the mountains of the Ring of Kerry, beauty hotspots that are renowned for tourism worldwide. And now you're putting this in front of an entirely different audience, and I think it has got a great opportunity to create its own trademark in those 13 rounds.
Wow, certainly whets the appetite anyway. You will have no time for Kerry FC, Ivan, will you?
I'll have to take a bit of annual leave. But Joe, funny enough, as Sean said that, I was actually watching during the week the hour-long programme from 2007 from Rally Ireland when it was up in Sligo. And okay, it was a different time of year. It was very, very wet now. But in the preview pieces, in the build-up to the starting the show, and they interview a lot of the drivers and ask them how did, you know, what the week is shaping up to be. But Sebastian Loeb and Marcus Grunholm are in a tight battle for the championship. Sebastian Loeb, multiple winner. And Sebastian Loeb himself said, like, it's going to be one of the most difficult challenges he's ever had in a rally, because the roads are so tight that automatically you're hitting grass verges and grass in the middle of the road, and it's like ice. I said, we don't get that anywhere else. And here in Ireland, we're all used to driving back roads at some point, and mostly on a daily basis we do. But like, these guys hadn't been up a back road country lane, as Sean said, a farm lane in Ireland where there's grass up the middle of the road. This can be like ice, and all of a sudden it can, you know, make the best driver in the world look like the worst driver in the world. And that's the unique side that Ireland will bring to the World Rally Championship. As you see the jungle and safari, and that's unique in itself. You see zebras, drafts. Sweden has the snow minus 20 this weekend, but Ireland has that unique qualities, and although we're living them and looking them every day, these drivers aren't.
Absolutely. Well, hopefully we won't find too many zebras up in Glencairn or something in the middle. Listen, guys, thanks very much. Our time is running out fairly quickly. Sean and Ivan, you'll be back next week. We'll give it one more good boot. I want to thank William as well, who actually rang us live from Sweden, which is absolutely fantastic, and wish him the very best luck. For now, we'll take a quick break after soccer.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.
Congratulations to Mercy Mount Hawk. Good to see signs of Tralee football getting strong again, and best luck in the Hogan Cup. That's Charles, yeah, absolutely. Don, Luke Mulligan was that winning factor. I won strictly with him from the St. Pat's. We better go find out who that is. Congrats, Luke. Gary Orne and Tiernan have brought massive drive in our kids in Ardfert to play football. They came to our local school today, and the kids were looking in awe of these players. We bleed black, and I congratulate them and our Ardfert players in their incredible win up Ardfert. Absolutely. So that's all the football taken care of. Joining us now is Dermot Carney of the final whistle, he says with his fingers crossed, to look ahead, I suppose, at Kerry FC, because they're preparing for their second season in the League of Ireland. And I suppose, I know when we kind of previewed them last season, we had nothing really to go on. One season in, we have something to go on, and Dermot Carney will take a look at us. Before we look ahead, there will be learnings from last season, Dermot.
Yeah, Donald, thanks for having me on this evening. I suppose there's definitely a lot to learn from last season. Plenty of games that the players were left fairly dejected by, games that they let a point, 3 points behind them, games that they got fairly on the end of a one-sided scoreline, to say that. But look, they will have learnt it, and having watched them in their pre-season phase of the Munster Senior Cup, they look a lot stronger. They look a lot more mentally tough than last season. They just look a more cohesive unit. They have had the chance this year, obviously, to enjoy a pre-season. Last year was a little bit more chaotic. There was players still coming in. They were trying to find their feet and figure out what's going to happen. But they haven't learned what the league is. Obviously, they have the new teams in the likes of Cork and UCD this year that they didn't play last year. So they'll be new, exciting challenges. But for overall, they'll definitely have learned a lot from last year and try to make it right this year.
Mm-hmm. And obviously, looking at, people will look at last year and they'll say, what, 6-7 points down at the bottom of the league. But I mean, the point is, I mean, they were in an awful lot of games for an awful long time. They just couldn't see them through. I mean, that's probably what Conor McCarthy will have to bring to the classroom this time.
It is. And speaking to the likes of Jack Kavanagh and Andy Spain at their media event last Friday night, you know, they want to make Kerry a lot more competitive, and they do want to preserve clean sheets in games and to make it a lot more compact at the back in those final maybe 15-20 minutes, where last year Kerry did take the lead and it's almost like heads dropped, they made changes and suddenly they might have conceded one if not two goals in games in those scenarios. But that is something that I, when I saw them play Cove the last day and speaking to some of the players as well, like they looked like they just had the heads together last year. Maybe nerves got the better of them at times in those vital moments. I remember when they played Longford at home, they were looking to see the game out and ended up losing 3-2, and you know, they wanted to learn from those silly little mistakes, and if they can play as well as they did against Cove in that Munster Senior Cup quarter final, they definitely would be a lot more competitive this mm-hmm. year.
Speak to us about one of the new faces that people might hear about, Andy Spain, the captain. Very solid guy. I was at the interview, very impressed with him, very focused, very professional maybe as well. He's going to be a huge impact.
Yeah, only 23 years of age as well, so he's bringing a lot of youth to the team, but he's also bringing a wealth of experience and is definitely going to fill into that captaincy role and bring some serious amount of leadership. He's been with Athlone and Treat United in the past, a Kildare native, and he's going to want to, you know, speaking to him the last day, he wants to you know, make Kerry competitive. He wants to achieve things with this team. He wants to make them a lot more competitive, a lot more solid at the back, and he's a quality player, and it's not just him. They have brought some other quality players into the squad, but Andy's a standout talent, and he was a rock at the back the last day against Cove, and would want to be now on Friday night against Cork City.
Mm-hmm. Before we go to Cork City game, other new faces, obviously, we mentioned Jack Kavanagh as well. Three or four new signings that have reason to excite us, maybe.
Yeah, I suppose since the last time we spoke, you know, Kerry have signed the likes of Antonio Tuta from Finn Harps to fight Lee Axworthy for the number one jersey this season. He comes down from Harps and had a, you know, he's been around the, you know, he's a Croatian international, he's been around the leagues over in Croatia for years. He's a journeyman, but he will bring experience. He looked very solid, very vocal presence, someone who commands his area, and maybe that was something last year that when Kerry were a bit maybe skittery inside in the box in those vital scenarios, watching him the last day, he just shouts, makes himself vocal, I'm coming for the ball and I'm going to claim it one way or the other. So that's what he wants to do. Ferdy O'Brien, a local native here in Tralee, he's been signed now for Kerry FC this year. Then you look at probably the star signing, if you want to call it that, in Valeri Dahlia from Athlone Town. Anyone who saw him last year playing against Kerry FC in Mount Top Park knows the threat that he brings. Very versatile forward, could play on the left, the right, plays the cam, plays a striker if they want to play him up there. He's going to be a very serious threat when he comes available. I know he's currently suffering from a knock, so probably Friday a little bit too soon for him, but we will wait and see, obviously, when the team news does drop on Friday evening. And then obviously Victor Udeze, who made his debut against Cove in that game, scored the winning goal. Big physical striker.
Very impressive, actually.
Yeah, he's only played academy football. His last team was with Athlone Town, and he's been someone that has been on the radar for Kerry last year. When Billy Dennehy was in charge, he did get in touch with him and was told to stay fit and stay healthy over the winter period, and, you know, impressed in those just behind closed doors friendlies and as a trialist. So, you know, that's what they're bringing to the table. Obviously, Andy Spain, Jack Kavanagh, as we mentioned, Stephen Healy and Darren McCarthy from Galway have come in. I don't know if they will see anyone between now and Friday, probably a bit too late, but you never know.
Yeah, they seem settled, though, to be fair. Obviously, it's a new season as well for their new manager, and we caught up with him ahead of the campaign, Conor McCarthy. Now joined by Conor McCarthy, manager of Kerry FC. I was reading up, you're one of the younger fellas, aren't you?
Yeah, 26 now, so I suppose, yeah, in the younger category of managers, I suppose, yeah.
Yeah. Can you chart your pathway? Because we were joking off here that the last time we interviewed you were sitting on the wall over in Clarny Celtic, and you were on a management pathway that way as well. You've really kind of fast-tracked, haven't you?
Yeah, I suppose fast-tracked is the word for it. I suppose, like, look, we're very lucky in the club that we're in here, that it's you know, the opportunities that are here, I suppose, and the belief that the club are having the coaches and the opportunities that they're willing to give coaches and players and whatnot is, you know, it's very exciting for anyone, whether they're involved or not involved, that it's here for them. So I suppose I'm very lucky to be in the role that I'm in, and I'm obviously very grateful for the club to give me the opportunity.
Mm-hmm. And of course, it's a learning experience all the way through. I mean, it's year number two, manager number two, a lot of players from last year, a lot of new faces as well. Is that part of the enjoyment of it, kind of blending those players together maybe on the training pitch before the season starts?
Yeah, definitely. Like, you know, you have a few different people coming in from different experiences. They might be still quite young, you know, in terms of their age, but I suppose they've had different experience at different clubs, whether it be their academy upbringing and then into their senior football. They've obviously been done it away from here, so they bring a different kind of, you know, experience. And, you know, the lads have come in, they've done very well, and they've mixed very well. I think they've been taken very well by the guys, and I think, look, performance-wise and what they've done and they brought to the group is very evident straight away. So, the boys have been excellent since they've come in, and look, hopefully they can keep kicking on. And look, as well, they've raised a bit of the standard like that, and it's good for that, in that sense.
The last couple of weeks must have been enjoyable, though. The Munster Senior Cup, a couple of wins under the belt, I mean, a few challenge matches as well over in Clarence Celtic with Galway and the whole lot. There seems to be a right good buzz here at the moment.
Yeah, or I suppose like our early days anyway, I think where this is week six, like so these early, well, I suppose the two games that we did play in the Munster Cup were two good games at Avondale and Cove last week. They were good wins, I suppose, and they were to get two clean sheets in the two games, it was something probably that we were kind of a bit more focused on this season. But yeah, I suppose there's a good buzz like that. It's, when you win any kind of couple of games, regardless of what level they're at there, it creates a good atmosphere around the place and a good environment. So yeah, it's been good so far. And obviously we played Galway in between as well, which I think we had a good showing. I know our scoreline was probably says differently, but in terms of performance again and some individual performance and collective performance, you know, we're all very happy with it. And then it kind of carried into the Cove game, which we saw quite a good performance overall again, and we were able to get the win in that game.
And yet all of a sudden the 38 week game season starts again, Cork City away. I mean, that was something that you couldn't even write maybe 10 years ago, that there'd be a Kerry team playing Cork City in the same league, in the same division. That in itself is historic and exciting.
Yeah, it is. No, look, obviously Cork City, you know, in the recent history, and I suppose in previous history as well, they've been very, very successful. You know, I kind of grew up watching a bit of Cork. I wouldn't say I was supporting them, but I was watching them. They were the closest team, but like we've seen them win, you know, I've seen them win cups and league titles and stuff. So a team consider ourselves, when the club was even established, now that we're technically on a level playing field with them next week, is a fantastic achievement for the club, that it's, you know, it shows the stride it's taken in a very short period of time. So look, it's going to be a great occasion for Kerry to go to Turner's Cross and play. But like that, it'll be, look, it's hopefully the first of many games.
Mm-hmm. And looking at the season ahead, I suppose, look, it's week by week, game by game, player by player, I suppose, injury free, hopefully. If you look back at last year, I mean, there obviously is a few learnings to be made. I mean, you're looking back at games that Kerry were in contention right up until the end and might have slipped, maybe games they were in control of and they slipped. Is there a lot to be learned from last year's season?
Yeah, definitely. I think, like, as a club, I suppose, as well as that, like, you know, as staff and as players, no one in the staff last year or player had ever previously played in the league, you know, bar one or two. So nearly everyone was brand new to everything. So there was a lot of learnings last year, and I suppose, like that, it's what you kind of take from your learnings. And, you know, if you really study them and look back and reflect them and look to improve, then that will be, you know, if we can do that, then I think we'll take another step forward this season. But yeah, there's definitely a lot of learnings last year that we took from it, and hopefully we can implement them this year.
Just on the new captain that's been announced, I mean, a big name, one of the first signings of the whole lot. What will he bring?
Yeah, look, Andy's like that. He's been brilliant since he's come in. I suppose his physical stature, he's a big lad, and you know, he brought, like, he fitting for him. We saw the Cove game. I thought he was brilliant in the Cove game. His defensive, you know, attributes. He's physically very strong, very good in the air, can cover ground. You know, he's a leader in terms of his performance and the way he speaks to players. So he's kind of come in, and it's been a very kind of easy fit as a captain. I think he's, you know, almost kind of taking the road himself without even trying. It just seems like a good fit, and he's got a good personality. He's well liked by the group, so, you know, we think he'll be a very good captain.
Mm-hmm. And the other side of the field there, like, a good goal scored here. Ryan was flying him in last year. He's got a bit more support this year, maybe a few more attacking forwards.
Yeah, definitely. I suppose for Ryan last year, it was probably a little bit unfair at times. We probably expected a little bit too much of him, but to be fair to Ryan, he delivered the goods, you know, majority of the time. So it's important to support that area. The pitch with Garrett Snow, we sat down in the off season and kind of really broke down the squad and areas we knew we needed to get support in there. And look, Victor's come in, and I find like that. If anyone's seen the weekend, the work and towards the effort that he put in, and the performance that he showed, creates great competition within that spot as well. And that only drives standards and drives performance.
Mm-hmm. Final word, a lot of support in Kerry for Kerry FC. A lot of people going out buying their membership tickets and coming to the odd game and all that. What can you promise them for this year ahead?
Yeah, so maybe not promise too much, but in terms of results. But no, look, I think from what they've seen so far, hopefully he's had a group of players and staff that are willing to give everything that they have for the fans. You know, we definitely feel like we owe them. The support that they gave us last season from the very start to the very end, regardless of what happened on the pitch, was unbelievable. You know, and we really want to be able to pay them back with a, hopefully a good few results this year and a few good nights. Hopefully they can go downtown after us and have a few good nights and maybe a few good nights away as well. So, you know, we're planning, we've worked very hard up to now and we'll continue to do that for the fans and hopefully they can really enjoy us, because this is what it's about. It's for them to be able to go away on a Friday night and enjoy a game of football.
You're looking forward to it?
Yeah, looking forward to it, I suppose.
Connor, thanks very much.
No worries.
Cheers. That's super.
Here in the company of Dermot Carney, the final whistle, and we're looking at Kerry FC as they prepare for their second season in the League of Ireland. Just before the break, of course, we were listening to the thoughts of Conor McCarthy, who comes across as very measured, comes across as very experienced, speaks a very good game, but he is very young.
Yeah, he's only 26 years of age. He's younger than myself, and he's taken charge of a League of Ireland team on Friday night, and once the ball is kicked in Turner's Cross, he will replace none other than Stephen Kenny as the youngest manager to ever manage a team in the League of Ireland. And like, talking to Conor, he looks the part, but like, to even last year, I remember in one of the press conferences, the lads were like, oh, you know, you must be in your 30s to be in your coaching career, and he's like, no, I was 25.
Yeah.
And it was just, you know, the way he comes across, the level of coaching that he brings to the table for someone so young is remarkable.
Yeah, and of course that'll grab the headlines hopefully all across the nation for that minute or hour, however it will be, the youngest manager, Kerry FC, the whole lot. But very quickly it will become about the results and the performances and the whole lot. Last year, I suppose people kind of maybe, I won't say a free pass, but I mean people were kind of patient and saying, look, we're coming from nowhere, we're trying to build, we're trying to put the flag up. The flag is there now. People probably will demand results maybe, or certainly maybe more competitive performances at different stages.
I think so, because we're in the second year of Kerry FC now, people will be expecting them to have gotten over the hurdle of last year, gotten over the learning curves, and with a new squad assembled, they will want to do it. Talking to Conor and James Shukru the last day, they want to finish mid-table. I know James Shukru said he'd be delighted to get two wins this year as opposed to the one last year in the league, but you know, they're gunning for mid-table, and some of the lads that we spoke to wanted to go as far as the playoffs. So there's confidence there, which maybe was not there last year, but they have assembled a great squad, the group. There's a great dynamic in the squad, that the lads are gelling well. And yeah, I think that they will want to be more competitive. Look, it is going to be a tough opening night to go down to Turner's Cross and play in the biggest venue that Kerry will have played in the League of Ireland history. It's the opening night. Cork will bring a crowd, and that place can get very hostile for any team that comes down there as the away side when Cork have the noise. And you know, that could be testing for some players who maybe not used to that.
Yeah, but it's not Premier League Cork, it's League One Cork, isn't it?
Yeah, it's for, you know, they did come down from the Premier Division. I remember speaking to John Caulfield when they came down here in 2019. They played Killarney Celtic in a friendly, and they played a Kerry District League selection over in Mountauk Park that year, and they looked really good that year in pre-season. They brought in a couple of players, and they were lucky to stay up that year. Mm-hmm. And then they, you know, when they did eventually go down, you know, they came back up in 2022, and results didn't go their way last year, and they ended up coming down via the playoffs, and they have lost some key players. They brought in some talented players as well, but look, they're, you know, they're wanting to go back up, and when you bring in a manager like Tim Clancy to take over a first division club, you are meaning business.
Mm-hmm. Come here, some places we need probably to, I suppose, improve on over last year. I mean, obviously, what did we get, 28 or 29 goals last season? That will certainly need to grow. And there's a new strike force, isn't there?
Yeah, looking at the last day, it looked like there was a front three of Daniel Akuti on the right, Nathan Gleeson on the left, and obviously the new man up front, which is Victor Udeze. Ryan Kelleher wasn't fit to play the last day, so Udeze got his start up top, and he did score the goal, and he's going to be someone that wants to bring that physical presence up top. You would have seen him as well. He's a tall, physical striker for someone such a young age as well, but well able to take control of the ball and take his chances when it comes to him. And that is something that, you know, Kerry would want to be a lot more aggressive when they go forward, a lot more creative and chances. Sean McGrath looked lively when he went forward the last day. Nathan Gleeson had an amazing contribution for that goal, even though it wasn't him that did set it up, it was Daniel Akuti. And speaking of Daniel himself, you know, he'd a host of chances, missed the penalty as well. And you know, some strikers might be frustrated when they might miss three or four chances at goal in games where, you know, it's knockout football. At the end of the day, you need to score, try and get your team over the line, and they did that in the end. And when you look at, you know, Valeri Doliak didn't come into the team, Ryan Kelleher, as I mentioned there, you know, they do have attacking options, but they will want to be like that as well. And when you look at, you know, 29 goals scored last year, they also conceded 91. Mm. So that is, when you look at the likes of Andy Spain coming in and Jack Kavanagh at the back, they will want to try and make a lot more clean sheets happen this season. They only picked up two last year in the league and one in the cup.
Yeah, and of course the other side of it is, I mean, some of the games we spoke about last year, they were in it till the 78th minute, the 75th minute, the 69th minute, the 81st minute, the 87th minute. They were in these games. They don't need a whole lot of step up or improvement or tightening up to kind of go from maybe closing out a game that they were 1-0 up in and getting the win, or, you know, maybe even fighting for a result if they're 1-0 down.
Yeah, I think complacency really does come into it. Like, I remember Finn Harps at home last year. Kerry were 1-0 down and Samuel Desanusi scored to make it 1-1, and you thought, oh, you know, Kerry are going to get a draw here, great result. And then at the other end, Harps scored the dying seconds to win the game, and it was just an absolute heartbreaking conclusion. But as you said there, that was a scenario that happened probably too many times last year, as far as Kerry were, you know, expecting it to happen. You know, they would go ahead in games and then concede, and you know, speaking to the lads as well, like, that is something that they do want to iron out. You know, nerves, as you said there, you know, bringing on substitutes maybe in those last 15-20 minutes and just, you know, just little mistakes, not marking your man from set pieces. I know set pieces was a massive thing last year, and looking at going off, we'll say this season, the way that they're tactically set up by Connor for those set pieces, you know, the last day Andy Spain and Sam were dominant in the air as well. Antonio Tuta was very vocal when he came out, so they will want to be a lot more ironclad in the defence. I think with what they've brought in and with the likes of Kevin and Sam who are coming in from last year, they definitely have that.
Mm-hmm. Who are the teams this year that we can get really close to? I mean, last year, you know, we got that win over Athlone, but maybe they were a bit better than us in the longer run, but there's certainly three or four teams that we were edging closer to.
I suppose you have to start with Athlone again. I suppose I've heard a lot of things that Athlone really are struggling in the pre-season stage. They have lost a host of players and really haven't strengthened too much, but they'll still be competitive. You look at the likes of, we'll say, you look at the Munster clubs and the likes of your Cove Ramblers, who, you know, Kerry beat the last day. They'll want to beat them again. And you look at Treaty United, have improved. They have got serious financial backing coming in and will want to be a powerhouse in the first division, so they could be, you know, someone that Kerry might struggle against this year. They have brought in a host of players. You know, you've Bray, Wexford, you've Longford Town, you've Finn Harps. There's a host of clubs last year. You know, if you look at the table, Harps finished just ahead of Kerry. You'd, you know, like I said, Longford, Bray, Wexford kind of all thereabouts. Athlone did finish in the playoffs last year. You know, Kerry could get a share of the points against them. When you look at those opening five games, Kerry travel obviously to Turner's Cross this Friday. You've Bray Wanderers at home, followed by Treaty at home. I know that sandwiched in between the Kerry and Treaty home game and the Athlone and Kerry game, you have Treaty United on a Monday night for the Munster Senior Cup semi-final, and then Kerry will play Cove as well at home. So you've three home games from your first five games. Bray, Athlone and Cove could be games that Kerry would see as potential three-pointers.
Mm-hmm. Three-pointers?
Well, look, we have to be somewhat confident this year.
3-3 is 9. We'll have 9 points after five games. But you might get a job with Kerry FC yourself. Come here, we have reasons to be hopeful, though, to be fair, haven't we?
We do. Like, if you look at that performance, just the way that, I suppose I did see a lot of their games last year, and of those 36 games, you know, Kerry only won one game, drew seven, and for the 28 losses, you could say they were in a lot of those games, maybe some of them not entirely too well. But going off the Cove game, that's probably the best performance I've seen from Kerry that they ended up did winning the game. You know, they looked, they did look good when they played in the first round of the cup against Avondale and managed to get the win in that game. It did come in the final quarter of that game.
And Avondale, to be fair, are a quality side. People will say they're non-league or whatever, but I mean, when it comes to Munster Senior League, they're up there.
No, there is a host of Munster Senior League clubs that are very, very strong enough to be in contention. I know there is talks of this third tier of League of Ireland football to be considered, has been in the pipeline. I think it was in the pipeline that everyone thought maybe Kerry FC would go into that, but Kerry applied for the first division licence, and there is clubs that are up and down the country that are competitive at amateur level, that are bringing in players who have played in the League of Ireland but, you know, are working full time elsewhere and just want to play amateur level football and are very competitive. Mm-hmm. And you know, as we were talking about, you know, results, you know, there was games last year where I did see Kerry play and I thought, oh, we should have taken something from that game. But seeing them play the last day, if they can emulate those performances and just be that tactically sound and just that cohesive and strong at the back. Very much. No, there might be a whole host of 1-0 wins, but look, there's 3 points on the board. I don't think it would matter whether it's 1-0 or.
And it is about results, you know. I mean, people will talk about performances getting better and the whole lot, but I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, it's about putting points on the board, I suppose, fairly early as well. I mean, because that in a way will keep the pressure off maybe Conor and James Shooker as well, you know, going forward. How do you feel we'll be this side of Christmas? Are you going to say we have 4 wins? I'm going to call you back in every fortnight anyway. I'm going to give out to you.
There's definitely 5 or 6 games that Kerry can win this year.
Yeah.
Like I'm hoping to see Kerry finish as high as 6 this year. I think they can do it. If people stay fit and healthy, I know Ryan Kelleher is back this weekend and Valeri's out at the moment. But if we can keep that squad fit and healthy for the rest of the season, I can't see a reason why, you know, they finished on 10 points last year. If they can get 27, 30 points, that was enough for seventh place in 2022. I think they'd be very happy with that to fight mid-table. That's what the management are expecting. The players want to go as high as the playoffs, but if they can keep that mentality going and keep those performances going, I can't see a reason why they can't.
Yeah, absolutely. And once again, on a winning streak, I mean, people are amazing. They'll flock through the gates, and Mount Hawke Park is a fantastic place to watch a match as well. Listen, Dermot Carney, thanks very much this evening. We'll have you back in maybe 3 or 4 weeks, and hopefully you'll have your 3 wins by then. You never know. We won't clash with the Monday night, obviously, with the treaty, because we'll let you off to work. You're doing fantastic work there as well with the final whistle. That's Dermot McCarthy, I was going to say, is James McCarthy. Dermot Carney, outside that neck of the woods as well. Tonight's show, we looked back at the Kerry Hurlers. I want to thank James McCarthy and Richard Foran. Then we had the big gang in from Mercy Mount Hawke, and very much congratulations to them in the Corny Very win, and the best of luck to them in the semi finals. And the best of luck as well to Downs, William Creighton, and thanks very much for taking that call live this evening. Of course, we had Sean Moriarty and we had Ivan Hurley, and as I said, that was Dermot Carney. And up next, it's Tog Sus, not with Mrs. Hurley now or Mrs. Murphy or anything. It's with Mary Conroy. There she is. She's back in all her glory as well. Fantastic music. We will do this all again next week. Thanks to Keane and thanks to Ivan. And we will talk to you next week.
Terrace Talk on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association with Meadowlands Hotel Tralee, where being local means coming home.